This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One.
Most people remember the flood.
The Great Flood of 1982 brought the worst upon our city.
The water at this point was just below his knee.
It's far worse than people can imagine.
President, are you going to give them any federal aid?
It came after a long winter and almost swallowed Fort Wayne whole. People still talk about it sometimes, when the sky starts to darken and rain falls for days without end. They look to their rivers and hope the levees will hold, that history won't repeat itself.
See the train?
Yeah.
So that's over what used to be the canal right below it. That's on the same line of run of road that was the canal.
Dave Scholl is walking me through an old industrial neighborhood in downtown Fort Wayne. It's called The Landing. Dave used to be an architect, and his face lights up as he describes the old brick buildings and tells the story of this place.
It's called The Landing because the boats would stop here and unload their commerce. And
that actually We're standing where three rivers, the St. Joseph's, St. Mary's, and the Maumee, used to meet. These bodies of water used to be an important part of life in Fort Wayne. They connected the city to the rest of the world, and they were its life's blood.
So that was really our founding, is why the original settlers were attracted here, because of the three rivers.
But the rivers were abandoned years ago, replaced by a railroad and imposing brick buildings. Dave leads me over crushed gravel and past buildings in various states of remodel. It's messy. The air is full of dust from dump trucks and jackhammers. I follow him under a bridge, where that train passed a few minutes ago, and around a bend in the road.
Right here we've got the river, phase one of the riverfront.
Dave goes on to explain all of the amazing things that will be built here, like parks, restaurants, and stores. He paints pictures in the air. I want to go down and see the actual rivers to try and get a sense of what started this whole project.
Where is the river? I don't see it.
He pauses and thinks about it. He would take me down there, he says, but we're pressed for time. So instead, he points over to some trees in the distance.
See that tree line down there, the big trees? That's the river. So it's flowing.
I think it's kind of fitting that we never make it down to the actual rivers. A lot of people who have lived in Fort Wayne their entire lives have never visited them. But as Dave looks out over the abandoned buildings and bridges, he dreams about restoring the town's connections to the rivers. You can't really talk about the history of Fort Wayne without talking about the rivers. They're the reason the city is even there. The place where Fort Wayne sits today used to be called Kekianga. It was the largest village that belonged to the Miami tribe. And when Europeans came to the area in the 17th century, the place where the rivers met became an important trading post, mainly because it was close to a short 6-mile portage that connected Lake Erie to Wabash and Mississippi rivers. In 1794, American General Anthony Wayne seized the land from the Miami and established a fort, which he named after himself. And so Fort Wayne, Indiana, was born. Things started to really take off in the new town when the Wabash Erie Canal was finished in the 1830s. The town became an important stop along the freight routes. Remember that area where Dave and I were walking? The Landing? That's where the boats would stop to unload goods from all over the U.S., but just 15 years after the canal was finished, it was replaced by a railroad. And this was the beginning of the end for the river's importance. After the railroad was put in, the rivers became more of a recreational place, where people would go to swim and fish. And everything was great, until the floods.
It felt like it was just, it had rained and rained, and the rivers grew, and we just worked harder and harder.
Brenda Gerber-Vincent was a teenager when the flood of 1982 swept over Fort Wayne. The area was coming out of this really intense winter, one that had dropped record amounts of snow on the town, and so everyone was on high alert. They knew that when the spring thaw came, there'd be a chance of flooding, but they just weren't prepared for the amount of water that poured into the city.
It's far worse than people can imagine. The cars are covered, houses are half full. You can see ice floes going in and out of the doorways, people trying to get some of the things out in boats.
The dams started to weep, which is just a poetic way of saying that water started to seep through the pores in their concrete. And soon, huge chunks of the city were underwater.
and people from all over the city started sandbagging.
The water rose really quickly over the next 3 days. And even though the town had 5,000 volunteers managing the flood, it just wasn't enough to stop the water.
We couldn't keep up with how fast the rivers were rising. And we knew that it was going to create significant damage to the infrastructure.
This wasn't the first time Fort Wayne flooded. The Great Flood of 1913 is still considered the worst natural disaster in the city's history. Rain started early Easter morning and fell for days. The rivers rose 15 feet, and dikes broke along the St. Joseph and Maumee rivers. This left parts of the city under 4 feet of water. People paddled boats down the streets, trying to save their families and belongings from the rising waters. And when the water level fell later, 15,000 people were homeless, and 7 were dead. After the Great Flood, the rivers were seen as dangerous, and the town started to distance itself from them. So by the time Brenda was growing up, the rivers really weren't a big part of everyday life.
But they weren't really a significant at all. I mean, people would have told you that they had lived in Fort Wayne and didn't even really know that we had rivers.
It was also around this time that people in Fort Wayne started to leave the downtown for the suburbs. This is part of a larger trend that was going on all over the country. With more and more cars, people started to spread out. And places like malls replaced the downtown as centers of the community.
So for the most part, people didn't come downtown, so the rivers were not a significant part of their awareness.
But when the flood hit in 82, it was impossible to ignore the rivers anymore. The rain really started to pick up on March 13th. As the waters continued to rise, city officials knew they were running out of time, and so they started letting the kids out of school to help fill sandbags. Brenda was one of those kids.
So we would literally have the empty bags, and we would take the shovels and hand tools and put the sand in the bags and then tie them, and then we would have a line where you would go from one sandbag to another. And they were really, I remember them being very, very heavy.
The volunteers spent days and nights filling over 1 million sandbags. They put them along the leaking dikes and riverbeds, trying to save as many houses as they could.
And when this happened, it didn't matter whether you lived on the rivers or by the rivers. Our community felt like it was our entire community's opportunity to get involved to save the city.
Ronald Reagan was the president, and he flew out to Indiana to meet the volunteers, especially the high schoolers like Brenda.
Fort Wayne made quite an impression on me. I want you to know that those young people, those volunteers out in the dike, if this wouldn't make any American confident of the future of our country to see those young people, I went away inspired.
The president came to our community and paid a visit to see the damage and the work that had been done, and to praise our community for what we had accomplished.
There's this iconic picture that kind of represents the resilience of Fort Wayne at that time. And it's actually of Brenda's brother, Jeff. He was another one of the young volunteers working in the sandbagging line. Jeff found a basketball somewhere near the Pemberton Dike, where most of the sandbagging was going on. They were in between shipments of sand, and so Jeff and a friend tried to fit in a quick game.
The water at this point was about up to his, I would say, just below his knees. So he was standing in water, and there's this picture of him of doing a very long shot and it going through the hoop.
You can still find that picture in the local paper's website. Jeff is mid-shot. He's wearing these thick winter gloves, and his boots are all covered in water. In the background, you can see two adults walking across a mountain of sandbags.
And that picture ended up on the front page of the paper, significant, and with a title, "The City That Saved Itself."
The city that saved itself. All the work that they put in paid off. The sandbags kept a lot of water at bay, and eventually, the water started to drop, and the city was safe. After the flood, people wanted to make sure that the rivers could never hurt them in that way again, and so they locked them away. In a lot of ways, it was really similar to what people had done after the Great Flood of 1913, but this time, they took every precaution. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers were flown in to rebuild and reinforce levees and flood walls. And when they left, the dikes were 6 feet higher and 2 feet thicker. The town also relocated a lot of people who lived along the riverbanks. Their houses were bulldozed, and a park was put in place to help contain future flood water. So now, when the rain starts to fall, the rivers can grow without destroying homes. And it worked. Fort Wayne hasn't been destroyed by a flood since. But that safety comes at a cost. It's like the rivers just disappeared. People pretended like they weren't even there. And for a long time, things stayed that way. But today, people in Fort Wayne are looking at the rivers with new eyes, as a place that can bring industry and life back to the town. The city wants to change people's perception and relationships with the rivers, to make them welcoming, calming places that people can spend time.
You know, for so many years that our rivers were not significant to the tourism or even the enjoyment or leisure of our community are now going to be front and center stage. And I think it's really going to change the way people feel about our city.
In 2011, the city commissioned a $75 million study of the riverfront. Thousands of people wrote in to share their vision for the rivers. They talked about parks, dragon boat races, and farmers markets. Things that will hopefully draw people back to the rivers and back to the downtown. And in 2015, the city started taking steps to make all that happen. They formed the Riverfront Implementation Committee to oversee development along the rivers. And Dave and Brenda are at the heart of this project.
We're, again, realizing the value of the river, so we're taking down buildings that are along the riverfront.
Back at the river, Dave tells me about all the new developments planned for along the riverbanks. In the background, you can already hear the construction that's underway. The hope is that these projects can revitalize Fort Wayne. So just like the town was born from the rivers over 200 years ago, it can resurrect itself from their waters again. And it's already paying off. The people of Fort Wayne have started to make the rivers a part of their lives again.
You know, it's really interesting because our rivers today are now a significant, and I kind of underline significant as I'm speaking, they're a significant part of our community now.
It's amazing the amount of activity on the river with kayakers and canoers and paddleboarders. It's really becoming a very well-used river.
Fort Wayne is weaving the rivers back into their story to showcase to the city and the world how important these bodies of water have been this entire time.
I think our rivers have always been there, and now we're capitalizing on just how special they truly are.
In Fort Wayne, Indiana, I'm Rebecca Nolan.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory, produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world.
Associate producers include Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, Molly Blaisdell, San Francisco, and Katya Singel, San Luis Obispo, California.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided in part by the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. People often associate the Society of St. Vincent de Paul with thrift stores. Donations like clothing, your gently used couch, or still serviceable washing machine generate funds to assist the society in putting food on the table for people in need, or keeping the lights on and families in their homes. To find a St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in your area, visit svdpusa.org.